Much of what we learn about science, nature, and the environment happens outside of school and beyond the walls of museums, zoos, and nature centers. I have worked as an independent environmental professional for many years and know there are others like me who interact with the public in communities worldwide. On the Talaterra podcast, we discover who these professionals are, what they do, and how they create change. Why do I focus on independent professionals? I focus on them because they move freely through communities. They move freely between schools, organizations, businesses, programs, and other informal learning environments. They are positioned to meet the public where they are, and this is powerful. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tanya Marion. Today, my guest is Joe Petroni. Joe is an architect, illustrator, writer, and teacher. She's the author of Listen to Your Land, a guide to regenerative land design that blends biophilic design and permaculture philosophy. And she's also a contributor to the Carbon Almanac and co-founder of the Earthwork Collective and Damn Good Humans. Thank you, Joe, so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me. It's a pleasure to be chatting with you today.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. We met working together on the Carbon Almanac, and we're part of the Carbon Almanac Network, and we've had lots of interaction, but never really a really good solid sit down just between you and me. So I'm looking forward to learning more about your work and how you came to do the work that you do, because what you do is really, it's insightful. It's very helpful. And as someone who wants to redesign the backyard and all that, what you share with your audience is really special. I think it's special. And so let's start with talking about your perm architecture. You are an architect by training, and your focus is on is a mix of biophilic design and permaculture. So how did you come to become an architect?
I'm a daughter of an architect, and it was very clear that I should and would become an architect, and I didn't really ever question it. I started working with my dad and went to architecture school and went through all my grades and everything like a good student. And then after a couple of years, I realized I don't really enjoy doing banks and hotels, do I? Mm-hmm. And at some point, I discovered gardening. And from gardening, I discovered permaculture. And I went full on Bill Mollison, like really hardcore training in permaculture.
Bill Mollison is a co-founder of the field of permaculture.
And then I went into, if you can call it that, ecology and climate and what do we do about this big thing that's happening to us. And after this long, windy detour, I came back to what I knew and I loved in architecture, which was the way architecture is a mirror of our relationship with nature. And so I came back to my architectural self, and that's what I've been doing ever since and developing it throughout the years.
So you developed perm architecture, and how long have you been doing this type of work?
I first founded perm architecture about 7 years ago. And I started writing about architecture and the architectural theory and the way I understand it about 4 years ago. And it's been really developing throughout the years to what is now the Listen to Your Land approach. The Listen to Your Land approach is not only bringing permaculture into the architectural design process. It's also integrating, of course, regenerative design, circular design, but also elements of bioclimatic and biophilic design. So it's a holistic approach to building on a land. And what I try to focus on most is the moment before you start doing anything. There's this magical moment of potential, of possibility. When you look at an empty plot and you say, this could be a place. And it really reflects the way we see our relationship to that place and our relationship to nature. Do we see ourselves as separate and superior to that place and build accordingly? Or do we see ourselves as part of that place, of belonging, as belonging to that place and build accordingly? So there's this moment of pause that I find is crucial and that we've sort of been losing lately.
I love what you just said about the pause and that moment, because your ebook, Listen to Your Land, really keeps people in that moment. I was going through the book. It's a 37-page book, and it comes with a 16-page checklist for homeowners, and you focus specifically on homes, private residences. You help homeowners think about the natural elements of their site. You walk them through diagramming their site, how to add the natural elements, what to consider, and how to add them to their diagrams. You talk about the land elements. You talk about neighbors and sounds and different things that they hear on their site. And then you also spend some time talking, helping homeowners think through things like their local ordinances and, you know, the infrastructure, just different things to take into consideration. You also discuss their needs around their home, and then you help them put everything together into a complete package. And you offer this as a kind of as a do-it-yourself resource. And it is really easy to read and easy to follow because it feels like you are there with the reader. I mean, I feel it. I know you. Okay. So I can hear your voice. So I have that perspective. But it really feels like you are walking me through everything carefully. And then there is the checklist, which is also very helpful and really very informative.
What biophilic design starts from is this idea that we have a savanna man in all of us. And this savanna man needs to know that he has prospect and refuge, that there's nature, water, the wind isn't striking him in the back when he's sleeping. There's all these elements, these patterns that our instincts seek in nature. And the way we've built our shelters is around that, is trying to minimize the discomfort that comes from being out in nature. But we've gone through such an extent in this direction that now we've insulated ourselves from nature completely. Like there's nothing, our houses are complete thermos boxes. And the savanna man inside of us is starting to lose the relationship with nature that it had. So biophilic design is trying to get that back into our environments, in our built environments. I used to call it, before biophilia was cool, I used to call it anthropogenic design. That's something that takes into account the ancient instincts in all of us.
Yeah, you are so right about people insulating themselves. The way that construction, at least here in Southern California, happens lately or for the past several years. Houses are so close to each other. You can, if your window and your neighbor's window were open, you could literally reach into your neighbor's house. And that's not an exaggeration. And it's just really something. I don't know what's between the house and the wall, their block wall, but I would assume not much because they really take the house and make it fill that space. So yeah, I hear you. I can point to several examples out here.
And not only is the way we build our houses a mirror of our perceived relationship with nature, and so each new project, a potential to reassess, to redefine this relationship with nature, and that's why I find this so exciting. There's also the hope that if people are more in touch with nature, they might be more inclined to saving it.
Yeah, and have more of a an emotional connection. Yeah, and I don't know where that happens or how that happens when the houses are built so close together. I don't know.
Yeah, doesn't happen in the subway.
No. Yeah. You offer this as an ebook. Do you ever offer this as a live version, kind of as a cohort-based workshop?
Yeah, this is what we're developing now. I'm trying to make it into so you do it yourself is out, and then do it together is the next natural step. Of course, I also do one-on-one consultation with both individuals and businesses. I'm currently building a set of trainings and workshops, training programs around bioclimatic and biophilic design.
So can you offer some insight into what a perma-architecture project might look like for a homeowner in a suburban neighborhood? How do you, and then you work remotely as well. You work long distance with people individually. You're not always on site. And so how did you come to develop that service, that particular service, the remote service?
Yeah, well, funnily enough, it goes back to my dad again, because I started traveling when I was about, say, 25. And I continued working with him remotely. I'd been his sort of right drawing hand for years, and now I was doing it again on Zoom before it was cool. And so it was a natural transition for me to start doing it with clients as well. And I did this for a couple of years with home builders, so self-builders, the enthusiastic self-builder who wants to do it himself and but needs a hand. And so I've been enjoying this doing it together one-on-one process by sharing the screen, sharing the phone on a site visit. So taking all the best of that technology can offer and holding a hand in this process. And it's been a tremendous amount of fun. And then I started doing it with eco-village developments and eco-quartier with green neighborhoods projects. And it led to full consultancy services on regenerative projects.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay, so tell us more about eco-villages and how does that, because then I will assume that there are several homeowners involved, and how does a project like that work compared to a typical suburban home?
Yes, participatory design is a tricky thing to do because everybody brings their own thing to the table, their own vision, their own ideas, their own will. And full disclaimer, I am not the one organizing all of this. I keep my distance from this very tricky puzzle of group managing. But I am there on virtually on site throughout the process, consulting on the process of understanding the land that they want to build in and of blending that with what they want to achieve, what they need for themselves, and with the third element, which is what you have as technology and finance, as budgets. So the third element. So this is the triad, my triad of regenerative design: what nature needs and offers, what we need and offer, and the tools and technology that we have for it at our disposal.
How large are these eco-villages? Are they a small collection of homes? What's the different sizes that you've seen so far?
I've been working in collaboration with an association, a French association that helps collectives build eco-villages with reversible habitats. A reversible habitat is a home that doesn't have a big impact on the land on which it is set, and then it can be either dismantled, moved, or composted. The end result is that it will not have, after it has been used and its use has been terminated, its like contract has been terminated, its impact on the land is nil, or as close to nil as possible.
Wow, that is really interesting. The habitat, reversible habitat. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, and so to answer your question, the number of houses like this that you can put on a lot is, you know, dependent on specific lots, and it can range from 7 to 8 houses to up to 20-25 houses on a lot.
That's a lot. It rivals the appearance and all in the size of a suburban track.
Mostly, we're going for the smaller range because it's usually local authorities that have empty lots where they take the initiative of filling them to offer residents, usually younger residents, affordable places to live.
Okay, so it's mostly a municipality that, or local government that initiates this type of a construction development? Or are there grassroots organizations who are also looking for vacant lots in their areas?
Both, absolutely both.
And are you seeing more eco-villages out in Europe, or do you know of them in the States and in other countries as well?
So I warmly recommend the Eco-Village Network. It's a website that references eco-villages all around the world, including, of course, US, Central America, and Europe.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the show notes as well. Yeah, with the other links.
Eco-villages are this enthusiastic adventure of trying to figure out how people can live together in a new way. So it's people who are reinventing the way we can be together. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. And if I can help them figure out how to do it with the land and not against it, then I'm there. And the same goes with real estate regenerative real estate development, which is the new philosophy in real estate development that seeks to make places better, that seeks to create thriving, regenerative communities in the places that they develop on.
That's exciting, and it's very encouraging to hear that as well, to hear that that philosophy is in place and people are thinking ahead and thinking forward. Okay. Now, because of you, Joe, I learned the word epistolary, which I did not know before.
That's because it's not a word.
I looked up the word epistolary, and it says that it's writing in the form of letters. And that is what you do for your blog. The rest of us would call a blog. That's your blog is a series of letters. And it is clever and it's refreshing. And through your letters, you share your observations, your activities, things that you're doing, things that you're involved in. And you also teach through your blog, which is called Joe's Epistolary. Now, how did you come to choose this particular format?
I started writing a blog like everybody else, because it was a marketing strategy that you had to have. And after a year of slogging through it, I realized that I needed to write to somebody that I couldn't write in an echo chamber of amorphous, eyeless auditors. And so I invented this crutch for myself, which is my imaginary friends who have funny names so that I don't take myself too seriously. And they all have their different personalities and different topics that I can talk to them about. And that's been very, very helpful to me in figuring out a voice, because the voice is different. And that was liberating. That was really nice breakthrough. And that's how Joe's Epistolary started.
Well, it's a lot of fun and it's interesting and very touching to learn from you in that way. And you are also an illustrator and you ask questions and teach through your illustrations as well. And you create these very clever and I keep using the word clever with you because everything that you do is very different. It's very fresh. And how did you choose to teach through the illustrations that you create? How did you choose that format? I know you're an architect, but your illustrations are very, very different. These are not blueprints. These are not architectural drawings. They're very different. How did you choose to teach through them?
Well, writing doesn't come naturally to me. Whereas drawing does. And at some point, it just felt natural to integrate it into my content, into my output. And one thing led to the next, and now we have this format that is specific to Joe's Epistolary, which blends illustration, time-lapse, if you want to call it that, illustration with audio on top.
My first encounter with your way of teaching through your illustrations and your videos, the way that you tell your stories was with a video that you created around climate for the Carbon Almanac Network.
Yeah, the way it came about was because I made it for the Epistolary. I made one video for the Epistolary sort of as a joke. And then Michel Porro, who's a common friend of ours and member mm-hmm. of the Carbon Almanac, called me to say, Joe, that's fantastic. I love it. You have to do more. And I thought about it and I said, okay, I'll do one for the Carbon Almanac. And I thought about it well and wrote something down and then recorded something and drew something and then it was out. And then more people said, oh, Joe, this is great. You have to do more.
Here is an excerpt from the video, It's Not Too Late, that Joe made for the Carbon Almanac. I encourage you to visit the show notes after listening to this episode to watch this illustration and this story take shape.
Wouldn't it be easier to just keep on going and hope? Hope that they got it all wrong and that there's nothing actually wrong after all. I'll think about it tomorrow. But today, for just one more day, please let me go about my life in the sweet faith of futures similar to our pasts. I promise I'll recycle more. I'm not afraid. I'm terrified. We all are. And yelling at each other for not doing enough about it is not going to make it any easier. Anger. One of the weapons working us against us, dividing us in ways worse than apathy does, or cynicism.
And how long does it take you to create a piece like that? Because they're always very, very short, but they're so impactful. They deliver such a strong message, each one.
Yeah, they all eat up a lot of time spent basking in the afternoon sun beforehand. There is a lot of sitting and not doing anything sort of exercise for them. And we've been losing that in the very fast-paced networking, social media world that we've been living in. And I've been fortunate enough to have the time to invest in not doing anything and just sitting in the warmth of the afternoon sun.
Well, that is wonderful. And so I hope you have many more opportunities to bask in the afternoon sun to create them, because they're very special pieces that you create.
Thank you so much, Tanya. Mm-hmm. It really means a lot. I sort of work and put content out and work and put content out without trying, without looking for the feedback, or even maybe avoiding it in a way so that I can focus on what I want to say, not what I want to hear from the audience. And it's so nice to get feedback like this from people like you.
Goodness. You're welcome. You're very welcome. Now, you are also a climate communicator. We already mentioned we've worked together on the Carbon Almanac, and you are very involved in the Connect the Dots resource at the Almanac that people can see. It's really this fantastic interactive resource using a platform that I assume came from you, that you knew about, and that your input into the project, right? The Obsidian platform?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so can you tell us a little bit about Connect the Dots and what people can find when they go to use that resource?
The Connect the Dots project started out as a need to find the way things are connected in a less than linear way, and visualizing this complexity in a different way than the linear way that you find in the book, in the Carbon Almanac. And so we needed to find a way to express this complexity. And so it so happens that I'm a software nerd and an app nerd and a note-taking app nerd, which is a special type of niche. And I had come across Obsidian and Rome Research. It's another one that's around about the same way. And we used that to develop the Connect the Dots project. And what it tries to do is, for one, bring you into this rabbit hole of interconnectedness between the issues and of climate change, like how you get from eating a hamburger to the rights of indigenous tribes from one place to another of the globe, bit by bit, by just caring. And so the point of it is, find a thing that you like, that makes you tick, and act there. And even more than that, after you've changed your light bulbs and started to got an electric car, etc., which are individual actions, which are fantastic, and we've been seeing more and more of that. The next step is local action in your community. Get something that involves 10 people, 20 people, 100 people in your community, and do that. And the next step is what the whole point of the Carbon Almanac is, which is systemic change, changing the way we do things so that our individual action becomes naturally positive for the environment. And so that's the whole trick with the Connect the Dots project.
Yeah, it's an expansive resource. Lots to look up, lots to learn. It's really deep. There's many layers to this resource. And I encourage listeners to go to the website. There'll be a link in the show notes to go explore Connect the Dots, because you will see connections and links to things that you might not have considered at all. You and the team really spent a lot of time on this, and it's really fantastic. And so your work in climate communication, there's a direct link to your being a climate communicator and your work in PERM architecture and how you help people connect to their site, to the land, to the nature that's around them, the natural elements. And to take this a step further, you helped co-found Earthwork Collective and also are in the early stages of launching a creative agency called Damn Good Humans. What is the agency about and how did you come up with the name?
Damn Humans is something that we need to change. We're in need of more talk about climate. We need to take this topic and put it on the table, like for real now, because we really need to organize. It's like there's still time where it's not too late, but we really have to hurry now. So we started thinking about what we can do about this, and making a creative agency that is focused on climate communication is the best thing to hone our skills around climate communication and around creative output. So that's what we're trying to do now, to change it from Damn Humans to Damn Good Humans.
Yes. Oh, very good. Very good. And so we'll look forward to more from Damn Good Humans, because I'm sure that there'll be a lot of good things coming out of that agency.
I hope so.
Yeah, I have no doubt. No doubt at all.
Yeah, and there's also a pitch. It says, we're climate communicators and we're damn good at it.
Yes. Excellent. Yes, and you are. You all are.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you teach architecture and site design, and really it's home design, through your work at PERM Architecture, through your ebook, Listen to Your Land. You teach through Joe's Epistolary, through your illustrations, and through your wonderful time-lapse videos. What's next for you?
Ha, a pause. I should pause more, shouldn't I? Well, actually, there is a new project going on, which is part climate communication and part illustrated videos, which is Tiny Humans Talk Climate. And Tiny Humans Talk Climate is tiny humans that have climate anxiety, just like the rest of us, but that do have the strength and bravery to take it out on the table and look it in the eyes.
Is this your own independent project, or are you working it with the other people as well?
Yes, that's a content service that I am developing now to provide to businesses and organizations that want to talk about their climate mission in a way that bypasses this sort of artificial discourse that we've been having about climate, and especially in a way that bypasses greenwashing, because we've had enough of that, haven't we?
Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's a wonderful service. Yeah, that's great, Joe. I am not surprised. I am not surprised at all.
You knew beautiful. There'd be another project to dig out.
Yes. I found it. That's beautiful. That is just wonderful. And that is currently ongoing.
Yes, I'm working on a pilot. I'm working on two pilots, actually, undisclosed pilots, but they will be ready when they are.
Well, great. So when they are ready, let us know happily at the, you know, whatever you have to share to the show notes and update listeners and update the show notes for this episode.
Gladly.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So thank you, Joe, so much for stopping by and introducing us to your work and introducing us to PERM architecture and the resources that you provide, which are so helpful. And it's so generous that you offer them for free, that people can download them and start their own DIY project. So where can people find you online?
First of all, thank you so much for having me. It has been a blast chatting with you. We always have fun. And about finding me, well, the permarchitecture.net website is the one referencing the Listen to Your Land approach. And my blog lives on joepetroni.substack.com. The Damn Good Humans project is at damngoodhumans.com. All the links are referenced below.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed my conversation with Joe Petroni. If you are interested in her Listen to Your Land approach, I encourage you to print out her ebook in color. It will be easier to follow Joe's references in color and to better understand the color coding that she uses. Her book is truly inspiring and her checklist is very helpful. And I personally am going to follow her guide as I work to turn the backyard into the refuge that I hope it will become when it's done. Thank you so much for joining us today. See you next time. Talaterra is a podcast for and about independent educators working in natural resource fields and environmental education. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with friends and colleagues. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Tanya Marion.